Go.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another beautiful edition of The Drive. Carrington Harrison here. Spec Bayless, a.k.a. Mr. I Hate Everything, Steven Spector. Spector is so bad, he's getting blamed for stuff on the text line that he didn't even do. This was like at 1:30. Show needs to shut the blank up and let Spec finish his takes. He normally doesn't say anything, but Jesus, let the guy get it out. Spec wasn't even on the air then. I mean, I know he normally has bad takes, but I'll at least defend the guy if he wasn't even present in this scenario. That's the kind of long-lasting impression you've made on the listener, Spec. I just want you to know that off the top. To my right, he went outside. He was making snow angels. He was putting his tongue out to catch the snowflakes. Is the one, the only. Brad Fanning, how you doing today, man?
Good, man. I'm the opposite of that. I hate me some snow. I get why old people move to Florida. Like, I'm tired of this. I don't want snow. I don't want cold. Give me sunshine, 85, flip-flops, and shorts, and I'm good.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll catch up with Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, who had the report that Les Miles in Kansas were having a conversation. We'll catch up with Dennis Dodd in just a bit. We'll also give you a chance to win a four-pack of World War I museum tickets for a very, very popular movie. Neil Smith will be in studio. We're actually going to do something really cool with Neil Smith today because the Chiefs are playing the Arizona Cardinals. We actually found an old Derek Thomas interview in which he is talking about Neil Smith. We'll play that for him. He probably hasn't heard it in a very long time. We'll get his reaction to hearing Derek Thomas. We'll do that coming up at 3:30. We'll also have Around the NFL today. We'll catch up with Sam Munson. We got a lot of stuff to get into between now and the end of the show. Before we get going, Spector still cannot find anyone to take his Ozzy Osbourne tickets. He bought these tickets. He pre-ordered them. He camped out for them. He was really excited to go. He's not going to go because of a wine and painting thing he has to do with the fiance.
Wine and panty?
Painting.
Oh, my bad.
Nobody wants to take the tickets. No one wants to go. So we're going to keep playing this game until someone accepts the tickets. You have to translate Ozzy Osbourne. If you can tell us what he's saying, which seems like an impossible game. This feels like that John Gruden game we play where you have to call back the play. If you can do that, you're going to see Ozzy Osbourne at the Sprint Center. Here he is.
I'm stuck. I'm permanently injured.
All right, one more time.
I got no idea what that is.
I'm stuck. I'm permanently injured.
If you know what Ozzy Osbourne is saying in that clip, call 913-576-7610, and you are going to see Ozzy Osbourne at Sprint Center. All you got to do is three things. Number one, you got to be listening at 2 o'clock, and you got to tell one friend. You don't got to tell two friends, just tell one. Number two, you got to be calling number six. I guess number three, you have to be able to translate what Ozzy Osbourne is saying. And number four, and most importantly, you got to call Steven Spector up.
You got to call him a moron today.
I would say number one on the show, Steven Spector loves to demean Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. I mean, all Alex Smith did was win AFC West championships, get two seeds in the playoffs, put together career years, mm-hmm. revitalize Arrowhead. But sure. For some reason, Spector likes to put him down. Another thing he likes to do is highlight when I get things wrong. Now, it doesn't happen very often. But I've been on a bad streak lately.
Been rough.
This is when I tried to be Carrington Busby yesterday. I don't believe for a second it's going to snow tomorrow. I think that they are pulling the biggest jig in the world on me and you. I think that the television and I think that the grocery stores are in cahoots.
Oh, I agree with you.
I think they are absolutely in cahoots. I think they want to get one good day before Thanksgiving. Hey, you know what? I mean, you know, hey, let's just go ahead and let's try to really load up.
Yeah.
Let's try to make sure this is a great month of November.
We got a surplus of eggs and bread and milk we got to unload.
Let's tell them.
And duct tape.
Let's tell them that it's going to snow this week. Let's tell them that. 1 to 3 inches. So you can go out there and you're loading up on Hot Pockets and popcorn and milk and eggs and cereal like the apocalypse is coming. I don't think it's snowing outside.
Have you looked outside?
I'm looking outside.
The whole side
flurry.
Of our studio is windows, and there's white flakes coming down, and it's been doing that for about an hour now.
You know what snow
is? And that's not snowing.
Snow is accumulation.
Oh.
Snow is roads with adverse driving conditions. Snow is when on the bottom of Fox 4 you're seeing schools canceled. This ain't snow. This is the equivalent of it sprinkling, and when they tell me it's going to be a thunderstorm, I'm not denying that there are not snow flurries outside. This is not snow. I know snow. Spectre went to Syracuse. He knows snow. What's happening right now in Kansas City is not snow.
It's not, even though there's like white flakes coming out of the sky and then landing on the ground.
This is dusting. That's what it is outside. It's dusting.
So it's dust that's falling from the air, not snowflakes.
It's dusting right now.
Yeah, no, I think it's snowing.
Yes! 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 We got it, baby! We got it! We got it! Woo! Woo! We got it! Yes! Listen to that! Listen to that! Oh, baby!
So I just want to tell you.
Is that Pete Weber, like the bowler?
So I just want to tell you guys, especially if you're driving on the Kansas side, to look at look at your neighbor on the right, and if you see a Kansas tag, do your best to get as far away from them as humanly possible.
There's no chance that there's snow tomorrow.
No, it's not. There's still no chance. It's not snowing yet.
The white flakes coming down is not snowing. I just want to confirm.
It's dusting right now. Therese Paylor was on Fesco in the morning earlier today, and he made a very good point about your Kansas City Chiefs, one I hadn't really thought about.
I think it's going to be tough. I think they got to at least go 13-3, maybe 14-2. But, you're really kind of gambling if you lose more than three games this entire season. Because I think the Patriots are well on their way to finishing 13-3 or something like that. And, of course, they're on the tiebreaker. So, yeah, if you're the Chiefs, you're probably going to have to win out here.
Therese Paylor thinks the Chiefs might have to win out to ensure they get the one seed in the AFC. The games remaining for your Kansas City Chiefs, they have a scrimmage this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. Should be fun. They play the Los Angeles Rams in Mexico City. I'm sure you guys already knew that. You didn't need me to tell you. After the bye week, at Oakland, home against Baltimore, home against Los Angeles, at Seattle, and home against the Oakland Raiders. I remember thinking that they weren't going to need that game against the Oakland Raiders, that they were going to be able to coast. That was going to be a rest game, and you get a double bye as you get ready to try to win the Super Bowl, and the road would have to go through Kansas City. But New England has turned things on. They have won their last six games, and their schedule, I think, is easier than the Chiefs the rest of the season. At Tennessee, at New York, the Jets, home against Minnesota, at Miami, at Pittsburgh, home against Buffalo, and home against the Jets to end the season. I'm not seeing a whole lot of tough games for the New England Patriots between now and the end of the season. Toughest game is probably at Pittsburgh. After that, maybe we can have a conversation about at Miami. They normally play New England tough. They beat them last year at the end of the season. Maybe at Tennessee, but that's a game you certainly think the Patriots are going to win this week. And home against Minnesota. Minnesota just hasn't shown me that they're a team that can compete against the Tier A teams in the NFL. Therese might have a point here. 15-1 might be necessary to get this done because 14-2 maybe gets it done, but that's counting on New England losing one of these remaining games, which doesn't appear to be too likely.
Well, I went back and I looked to find out how long it's been since the team actually had to go 15-1 in the AFC to win the number one seed. And over the last 15 years, it's only happened one time where you actually needed to be 15-1. To get the number one seed, and that was way back in 2004. I will tell you this, one game that I think it's easy to overlook on the Patriots' schedule, and that's the game on the road at Miami. They lost there last year. They seem to have an issue when they go to Miami. When the Patriots are playing in Miami, they get beat more often than you think. Two of the last 3 years, they've lost at Miami, and I understand back in, 2015, that was the final game of the season. But I don't think every single game's a kick-in. I think the game at Pittsburgh is going to be tough for New England. I think the game at Miami is going to be tough for New England. But for the Chiefs, it's a little bit tougher. The Rams game, Speck and I were kicking this around before the show. I'm like, what percent chance do you give the Chiefs to win that game? He said 40-45. So I don't think they're going to be favored in that game in Mexico City.
I don't think they
are
either.
I think another losable game is on the road at Seattle. So I think there's a decent chance that the Chiefs end up finishing 13-3 and lose the tiebreaker to the New England Patriots. I'm not totally on board with Therese. I think the Chiefs have room for one loss the rest of the way to be able to secure the one seed because, frankly, I mean, over the last 15 years, going 15-1, it's only happened one time when you needed that to happen. But two losses for the Chiefs, and I think they're I think they're going to be going to New England for the AFC title game if it gets that far. I understand his point. I don't think they need to be 15-1, but I think 14-2 locks up the one seed in the AFC.
Yeah, and we say that here. I mean, which one of these schedules would you rather have down the stretch? I think you rather have New England's schedule than Kansas City's down the stretch. I'm not saying that New England just plays cupcakes and they don't have a difficult schedule. I mean, at Pittsburgh, I would say is a difficult schedule. At Miami, a team in your division that normally plays them tough, I would say is a difficult game. Home against Minnesota, I don't think it's a tough game, but I think that's equivalent to playing Baltimore at home.
Sure.
The same thing that Kansas City does. I think you side with New England and you probably take that. I mean, 14-2 should be good enough, but I'm looking at this New England thing, man. It's tough to find the loss right now. I don't know if you can predict New England to lose another game. Maybe they end up slipping up in one of these games. I think it's going to be tough to predict New England to lose any of their games remaining. The game against Pittsburgh is always tough, but Brady normally tends to have the advantage in that one, and they always seem to pull one of those games late.
The Steelers should have beat them last year.
Agreed.
If the catch rules were the same now, the Steelers would have beat the Patriots last year in Pittsburgh. So I think that's a tough one. The Miami game, back-to-back, I mean, actually, that's a tough three-game stretch for New England, is Minnesota, Miami, and Pittsburgh. And I'm not just sitting back and saying that game at Tennessee isn't going to be a tough one either. I watched the majority of that Titans-Cowboys game in Arlington on Monday night, the one spec where he lost in Survivor. Tennessee, they can grind some things out if they need to. I'm not saying Tennessee's a better football team than the Patriots, but I think there's going to be one that sneaks up on them because it happens to every team in the NFL at some point.
If you guys missed it, Bob Sutton, defensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, met with the media today, and he seems pretty optimistic that Justin Houston is going to play on Sunday.
Hopefully he'll pick up right where he left off. I mean, of all the guys coming, you know, Dan's coming back from a little longer thing. We haven't got EB back, but Justin was our most recent, you know, guy that this out. Justin's played not too long ago, so I think he has a I think we have a better feeling that he's going to be close to where he was. You know, we won't know until we see him out there and see how he does all the things when it's totally full speed. You know, you go hard in practice, but, you know, you probably still don't have quite those little bursts and reactions that you have in a ball game, you know. But I think he's going to be fine. He says he feels really good, and hopefully we'll get him back because he was playing really good football, you know, and that would be a great addition for us here.
I will give the Chiefs this as maybe different than the Eric Berry injury was certainly. There might not even be an NFL comparison so far this season to what's happened to Eric Berry. The Chiefs have never given you reason to think that the Justin Houston injury was very serious. Even when they first diagnosed us, whenever Mike Garofalo from NFL Network had that report, they've never given you reason to think that Justin Houston was going to miss a significant amount of time. If I had to guess, I think Justin Houston plays sparingly in this, at least by Justin Houston standards.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't normally play the snaps he would in this one to really kind of ratchet it up for the game against the Los Angeles Rams. I know it might not matter, at least on paper. Let me change it. Maybe people don't think that it matters because you're playing a team in the NFC and it doesn't have any AFC tiebreakers. If you are in a battle right now with the New England Patriots, who at worst are dropping one more game this season, man, every game counts now. You might need to go 14-2 to ensure you get the one seed and the games at Arrowhead. I don't care if you're playing the Arizona Cardinals or the Rams. You can't afford to lose a game to anybody right now, given how well New England's playing.
And I think this is the perfect game for him to come back. I mean, I watch a bunch of film breakdown on the Arizona Cardinals offensive line, and it's not good. I mean, they're terrible, and there's a bunch of reasons why the Cardinals are bad, and the O-line's one of them. So I'm with you, C-Dot. I think that Houston's going to get in there. I don't think he'll play a full game. I think he needs to get in there, get some reps, get back into game shape so he's ready to go for the game against the Rams. It's the perfect time and the perfect game for him to come back.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll catch up with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports to get the latest on Les Miles. Dennis Dodd is reporting that Les Miles and Kansas met today and had their first conversation, which to me appears to be getting closer and closer to Kansas announcing that Les Miles is the next coach of their football team. But coming up next, a prominent baseball analyst and former MLB general manager thinks that the Royals should trade Salvador Perez. We'll discuss it coming up. It's The Drive. Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 15 minutes, Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports will be on. He has a report that Les Miles in Kansas met today. They're having conversations about Les Miles becoming the next head football coach at the University of Kansas. I think at some point, maybe we can have a conversation if Kansas hires Les Miles of who's the best football coach in the area, because Les Miles has a very impressive resume.
A little bit more impressive than Barry Odoms, do you think, or not?
I think I was talking about Andy Reid.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
I mean, he has won a championship before.
Yeah, he's played for two championships. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there. Just throwing it out there early. Coming up, we'll also take a minute. We'll also give you a chance to win a 4-pack of World War I museum tickets. A very popular movie is today's pop quiz. We'll get to that. But earlier today on MLB Network, they were having a conversation about trading your future Hall of Fame catcher, Salvador Perez.
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't trade Salvador Perez. I mean, Kansas City's got no chance of winning again Salvador Perez is over the hill. Why don't they trade him right now? He's got a reasonable enough contract. Trade him and get something for him. I mean, I mean, leadership for rebuilding is great, but go get a journeyman guy who's a good leader, not your like a good catcher that could help a playoff contending team that could bring back, you know, two or three pretty impactful prospects for you. So if I'm Kansas City, I'm moving Salvador Perez, but it doesn't even sound like it's a consideration for them.
Two things on what Steve Phillips said. First, he's a former GM, correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so he got fired. That's one thing. So and the other part of this is that I don't think he's saying that Salvador Perez is going to be over the hill before the Royals get a chance to win again. That's not factually not correct. I mean, Sal's contract runs through 2021, and then it'll be 31 years old. So that part to me, I'm going to disagree with. I get. But if you want to say, should you trade Sal Perez, I'll listen to that. As a matter of fact, I had it from a pretty good source that he was getting shopped around a little bit last year. So here's the deal with Sal, and here's why I think that there is some, you know, there's some credibility to what Steve Phillips is saying, even though I disagree with a couple of things that he said in there. First off, Sal's starting to get expensive. All right? Keep in mind, he made $1.75 million the year the Royals won the World Series, which is just ridiculous because he's on a crummy deal. All right, he's going to make $11.2 million this year, $14.2 the next two years. So Sal's getting pretty expensive, and then he'll be a free agent for 2022 when he'll be 32 years old. There's one argument for trying to trade Sal Perez. Argument number two, you're getting peak Salvi right now. All right, he's 28, 29 years old. You're getting peak Sal Perez, gold glover, behind the plate, great bat. What does he have? 27 home runs the last 2 years. So you're getting a peak offensive player, and you're getting a peak defensive player right now. And we know what happens with catchers. Eventually, they break down. So if you want to trade him, now's the time to do it from a financial standpoint and for the fact that he's at his peak performance right now. So with that, I'll lend him some credit. The other part of this, too, is you've got Melvis Valoria, 21-year-old kid that came up and looked pretty decent, you know, in the games that he played. Melvis, if you remember him, he had – he started 7 games, played in 10, and hit, I believe it's 259 this year. So you've got a young guy there, and you got a young guy in Cam Gallagher. So for those reasons, I'm with Steve Phillips. But if you're going to say that, you know, they're not going to have a chance to win before Sal's contract is up or before he's over the hill, I'm not buying that.
Here's what Josh Vernier thinks about this. He thinks that the Royals should really consider it.
They should entertain it. I understand that leadership is only as good as the numbers that you're putting up on a regular basis. But the kind of drive, the kind of energy that Salvador Perez brings to that clubhouse, man, I'm willing to part with just about anybody. Salvi might be the one mainstay that I want to stay here in Kansas City, and that is solely selfish. Because your point is right. Salvi's best interest is to go to a winner and to get on the national scene, because if we're honest with ourselves, with what 2019 is likely going to look like at Kauffman Stadium, anywhere else might be an upgrade.
I don't have a problem if they're going to shop him. I really don't. I think we're to the point now where, you know, you go through a 100-loss season, you miss the playoffs for your third straight year, you're in full rebuild mode, and Salvi's at peak value and he's going to get really, really expensive. I mean, I understand where Vern's coming from. There's a lot of people out there that are going to be really upset. No more Salvi splash in Kansas City, none of that stuff. But let's be honest with you here. All right, that era is past. And I prefer winning more than hanging on to guys that I don't think – you know, that we should be hanging on to. I think Sal Perez is a great player. I mean, one of the best players. See, you think he has a chance to go to the Hall of Fame.
I do.
But if the deal is right and you can get a haul back for Sal Perez, then you absolutely do it. I swapped texts with a guy that's in the industry, an agent, and he got back with me. He said, you know, a top 10 prospect and a top 30 guy plus a reliever. You know, that's what they think you can get back. So, a top 10 prospect in baseball, a top 30 prospect in baseball, plus another reliever. I'd be willing to entertain that if I was the Royals.
I'm still holding Salvador Perez in the same category that I would hold Whit Merrifield, acknowledging that their two contracts are completely different, and Salvi makes a lot more money than Whit Merrifield. At some point, the Royals need to establish their core guys. That I'm with you. The 2014, 2015 Royals, that's over. It's done with. You need to establish when I think you can be good in 2020, who the pillars of that team are going to be. If you think Salvador Perez is going to be a pillar on that team, then you need to keep him. And I don't want to make it seem like Salvador Perez's contract is so astronomical that the Royals can't hold it. Salvador Perez, based on what he used to make, and based on now and what he really should be making on the open market, is still a really, really good contract for a team. I mean, it's essentially a three-year, $40 million contract that they have Salvador Perez on for a guy who is arguably top three at his position. Man, that's a good contract to have. You always talk about the intangible values and putting butts
in
seats.
And that's the other part of it. That's the value for the Royals, too.
Salvador Perez is their most popular player on the team. Mm-hmm. Whit Merrifield's popular. I think Raul Mondesi can be popular. Salvador Perez is their most popular player, and he's still good. I'm always going to listen if someone's going to wow you with an offer and give you a Gleyber Torres kind of guy. I don't know how realistic that is for a catcher that's almost 30 years old at this point. To me, Salvi probably still has more value for your team than he does for somebody else.
Yeah, but if you're going to unload him, this is the time to do it. That's my point. All right, I love Salvador Perez, and I'd love to have him in Kansas City. I've been critical of some of his defensive stuff, and I think rightfully so. But I want Salvi in Kansas City. But if you're going to unload him, last year or now is the time to do it. You seem like you got some young prospects coming up with this Valoria kid. You got Cam Gallagher that I think would fill in nicely as Drew Butera's role, who's now with the Rockies. So I think if we're going to go with this youth movement and rebuild, and what was one of the things that John Heyman said in his tweet, the Royals are trying to do three things at the GM meetings and the winter meetings this year. They're trying to build a bullpen, they're trying to rebuild, and they're trying to cut payroll. You could cut payroll big time if you got a guy on a rookie contract, on a rookie deal, in Kansas City, and you're unloading a 11.2 this year and 14.2 the next year.
But this is maybe where I'm a little bit confused, is you wanted the Royals to go out there and sign Eric Hosmer. Let me ask you this. Over the next 3 years, who do we think is going to be better at playing baseball, Salvador Perez or Eric Hosmer?
I think Eric Hosmer's a better leader. I think he provides better leadership in that clubhouse. I think he's a guy that you can follow. You know, Salvi's fun and brings a ton of energy. I don't necessarily think Salvi's a great leader. And when you're in the middle of a rebuild, you want leadership. You want guys that you can follow. And so that's the difference to me.
But you also say that your locker room needs three different kinds of leaders. You need the American leader, which Eric Hosmer,
the position player leader,
and then you need the Latin leader.
And then that's what's pitching leader too.
You and I've been in that clubhouse before. The Latin players and the non-American players gravitate towards Salvador Perez.
Sure.
I just find it hard to believe if I'm a 22-year-old non-English speaking player, I can't come in there and see what Salvador Perez has done, who turned himself into a guy who got robbed on his first contract and turned himself into a near Hall of Famer.
Sure.
That's not somebody I would want to emulate.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think the Royals felt like Hosmer had more leadership value and they want to build around him more than anybody else. You know, but you're right. You do need a Latin leader. You need a position player leader. And you also need a leader on the pitching staff, like James Shields was for the Royals back in the day. I think I don't think he was a terrific starting pitcher. I think his leadership provided more value than that. Listen, I want Salvi to be a Royal. I'm not saying that. I'm to the point now where I would actually listen to trade for him if it's the right deal. And again, an agent in the business texted me back and he said, realistically, on the market, you can get a top 10 prospect in baseball, a top 30 prospect in baseball, and a reliever if the Royals trade Sal Perez.
I just look at Salvi's contract, man. It's essentially 3 years, $40 million for Salvador Perez, man. If you can't give Salvador Perez that money, then what are we doing here? That's a contract that the Royals should not be trying to shed. I'm always going to listen if someone is going to wow you with an offer, but that's 99% of Major League Baseball players and athletes as a whole. If somebody wants to give you their top prospect for Salvador Perez, you got to listen. I'm much more of a believer. I would find my pillars. To me, Whit Merrifield is a pillar. Adalberto Mondesi is a pillar. Jake Junis is a pillar. Brad Keller is a pillar. And Salvador Perez should be in that same grouping as somebody you think in 2020 when you're trying to make the playoffs that he's going to be one of your more important players.
And I know we got to take a break, but quickly, I mean, the one thing, too, that you run the risk of doing, and I've always said this, I want to be great up the middle. I want to be great at catcher, shortstop, second base, and center field. And if you get rid of Sal Perez, that weakens you there.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll catch up with Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, who has a report that Les Miles in Kansas are meeting to talk about their vacancy for head football coach. We'll talk to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports coming up. It's The Drive. Back in on the drive coming up in about 15 minutes. We will all take a minute. And Matt Miller, when we had him on the show yesterday, said something really, really interesting about Steven Nelson that we didn't get to. We'll talk about that coming up in about 15 minutes. But right now, we welcome onto the show of CBS Sports, national college football writer, Dennis Dodd. He had a report earlier today that said the Les Miles camp and Kansas, they have spoken. Dennis, thanks a lot for coming on today. What is the latest between Les Miles and KU?
Just that there seems to be mutual interest. They've at least made contact with each other, representatives of both camps, and they go from there. I think a lot of people have listed Les as the number one candidate, and I think Kansas would like to vet him before, you know, moving on or moving up, or moving on in the process, or moving on with another person. So they could do a lot worse, I would tell you that.
No, Dennis, you're right on that one. It's obvious why Kansas will want Les Miles, but let's ask this question. Why would Les Miles want to coach at Kansas, in your opinion?
Les Miles wants to coach football. His age is hurting him, I think. There was a few openings last year that he was not even given a phone call on. And it started out, I think, when he got fired at LSU in, what was it, September of 16. He was like a Power 5 only guy, and then it became, well, I'll take anything. And now he's to the point where, and I'm not speaking for him, I'm just speculating, he's now to the point that, look, all these guys just want to coach ball. You know, money is money. He's got money. I think he just wants to get back in the game. And the fact that it's Kansas and it has an opening seems to fit him, and he's got a relationship with Jeff Long as well.
Talking to Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. Dennis, do you think there are any other schools that KU's going to have to compete with to get Les Miles, or you think this is it?
I don't think so, because the list, it's going to be I think kind of a quiet Philly season. There were 22 openings last year. There are only going to be a handful this year. I don't think Les Miles is going to Louisville. I don't think Les Miles is going to USC or East Carolina or some of these jobs, North Carolina, that's going to open. I think this fits him because, look, it's the same reason that Charlie Wise takes Kansas or any of these other coaches take downtrodden programs. They think they can win there. They think they're the guy. And I don't doubt him. I think he can get Kansas back to to bowl contention and playing in bowls.
You said Kansas is going to have to vet him. What do you think the most – I'm concerned about the age thing. I'm concerned about him coming in and having to rebuild a program because that's not what he had to do when he went to LSU.
Yeah.
And he got Oklahoma State going pretty well before he went to LSU. When Kansas vets him, what are the most important things that they're going to have to find out from Les Miles?
I think the age doesn't bother me. If you look at him, he's like Nick Saban. He looks 10 years younger than he is. The energy is there. There's no question about that. And I think that – yeah, I think that hurts him. I think it's unfair to him because he is quirky, but he can coach. You know, everybody wants to make fun of the eating grass thing and all that, but the guy is smart. He's indicated in the past, at least to others, that he'd switch to a spread offense if that's what it takes. And I think that would probably compete best in the Big 12 because he was a staunch pro-style run-first guy at LSU and was criticized for not developing quarterbacks, but I think he could do it. I think he'd do whatever they wanted him to do. I think one of his selling points is there's absolutely no scandal, no NCAA violations in his background. He recruits well. He's got the energy. So I don't see any downside because if you're not going to get a guy like him, you're going to get a guy who in 4 years is going to be gone. And I'll tell you why. If he wins, he's going to take a step up. If he loses, he's going to be fired. It's not a 20-year job at Kansas. In fact, it may be a two-coach rebuild job. You know, whoever the next coach is may be a bridge to the next guy. But I think and I'm not speaking for Les Miles, but I think this could be a retirement job for him. You know, he could stay 6, 7, 8 more years, and that'd be it for him.
Right now we're talking to Dennis Dodd with CBS Sports. You lead me into my question about the offense. You don't seem that worried about it. You are right. They ran a pro-style offense at LSU, a lot different coaching SEC style and what you can do there compared to the Big 12 that normally runs air raid spread type offenses.
Yeah, no, I think he'd be fine with it. Just turn over. He's contacted guys to be his offensive coordinator, and just turn it over to a guy you have faith in and run it. I mean, basically what David Beatty was running. It wasn't running well, but Kansas wasn't a good program. And if that's, look, if that's what it takes to win in the Big 12, fine. If, you know, I've heard other people suggest, hey, just go to the option, hire an option coach and do that. I don't have a problem with that. It's just you can't recruit to it in the Big 12. You're not going to get a quarterback. So I think you do it. I think they'd be successful.
Dennis, last question here. In theory, Kansas wants Les Miles, and Les Miles wants to coach. If they like each other, if the situation works, how long until Les Miles can be named the next head football coach at Kansas?
Well, I think Jeff Long kind of answered that question Sunday when he said sooner rather than later. I think you can read into that the early signing day on December 19th. I think it's crucial that you get a guy, you know, maybe this month, to get in there and get ready to go and start recruiting, because that's where it starts for any program. And now this early signing period, you saw it last year, it put a lot of pressures on schools to fire coaches early because they had to get them in and get recruiting. So what's today, the 8th?
Yeah, today's the 8th.
Yeah, I would speculate maybe this month.
And that's Dennis Dye with CBS Sports, national college football writer with the latest on Les Miles. Thanks a lot, Dennis.
All right, guys, thank you.
Really appreciate Dennis making the time to come on with us and give us the latest on Les Miles and Kansas. You were a lot more worried about the age than I was when it came to Les Miles. What do you make from Dennis not really being worried about the age with Les Miles?
Yeah, the age isn't necessarily the worry for me. It's the, do you have it in you for a massive rebuild? Like, are you willing to put in the time and the effort to rebuild a program? You're not rolling into LSU like he did after he left Oklahoma State. He's not coming to a program that's ready-made for him. It's not necessarily the age. It's just, are you willing to do that? Because as Dennis talked about in the interview too, I mean, Les has got plenty of money. So what's the motivation? If his motivation is to truly coach football because that's what he loves doing and that's what he's passionate about doing, then I'm in for it. But to me, if I'm Kansas, that's the biggest thing I have to vet when I talk to Les Miles. Are you up for this? Why do you want this job? You know, are you up for a massive rebuild of mammoth proportions? If you can do that, and if they buy it, then I'm in. I got no problem with Les Miles' resume is amazing. His reputation is great. You know, all that stuff. But are you up for the rebuild at this point in your life?
I never really had that concern for Les Miles. He just seems like somebody that is just motivated to go out there and coach football. He just seems like a different cat. I think he tried to get back into it last year. I think he really wanted to coach at Tennessee. They just weren't really that interested in Les Miles. I think he wanted to get back last year, but maybe the offers didn't come in how it was. And I thought Dennis made a good point. Last year, it was maybe looking for specific jobs. This year, man, I'm tired of being at home. You're kind of stir crazy here. You want to go out there and you want to coach. My question more from Les Miles would be, if I'm Jeff Long, it wouldn't really be the desire, because I'd never really question that with Les Miles. It's just going to be how you win games in the SEC and the kind of athletes that you can get at LSU. It's just going to be different at Kansas. Can your offense translate? Can the things you do really well? I mean, they never recruited quarterbacks really well at LSU. They didn't really have
to. Matt Flynn when they won a national title, I think?
It was kind of like how Alabama was. I mean, pre-Tua. They never really had good quarterbacks. A.J. McCarron wasn't a good quarterback. Greg McElroy wasn't a great quarterback.
Great Jalen NFL Hurts wasn't quarterback.
I mean, they weren't even great college quarterbacks.
Well, they won
in my
national
opinion.
Championships, though, right? I mean, they won with Matt Flynn down at LSU. I don't care about these guys going to the NFL. I would certainly love for Kansas to have an NFL-type quarterback. If I'm a Kansas fan, I want to win games. I want to go to bowl games. I want to compete for a conference championship. And if the quarterback goes to the NFL, great. If not, no biggie.
Yeah, but I think the big difference is, I'm not even talking NFL-wise, though. I think if you coach at Alabama, you have the best of the best around you at everything else and the best coaching. You can have an average quarterback and get by with it. At Kansas, you can't have an average quarterback because you're not going to be able to out-talent and out-athlete everybody else. That's how I think those – so at LSU, if you're going to have seven guys on your defense go to the NFL and you're going to have NFL-caliber running backs all the time, you can have a quarterback that can't throw because you can still score and your defense can do things. That's not the case. I mean, Kansas has had one good quarterback the last 15 years. It was Todd Reesig.
Yeah.
And then since then, they haven't found competent quarterback play and they haven't been very good. Can you recruit a quarterback? Because in the Big 12, you are going to need to recruit a quarterback to win.
Yeah, and back to what I was saying about – about Les Miles. Here's what I know at 48 years old. I know things that are important to me now are different than when I was younger. And that happens to every single one of us. If you're completely honest with yourself, things that matter to you when you were 22 are different at 42. And at 48, things are different to me now than they were at 38. So at Les Miles in his 60s with a national championship in his back pocket, I want to know what's important to him. I want to know what his commitment level is. I want to know if this is what he really wants to do, because priorities change over the course of your lifetime depending on what you do and what you don't do and what you accomplish and what you don't. That, to me, is a big thing for me if they hire Les Miles.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll give you a chance to win a 4-pack of World War I museum tickets with a very, very popular movie, and we'll all take a minute coming up. It's The Drive.
Well, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Give me a minute.
You are officially on the clock.
Back in on The Drive coming up in just a bit. We will get to your chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to the World War I Museum. We'll also play for you what Matt Miller had to say yesterday about Steven Nelson's contract. We didn't really talk a whole lot about it. We talk about contract year. The only person we talk about a contract year with is D. Ford. He's not the only person in that defense putting it together in a career season. Steven Nelson is in the same category. We'll talk about him coming up in just a bit. And at 3 o'clock, I wonder if we are all off, us meaning we, in this room about the Chiefs and Cardinals game. I'll get into that coming up in just a bit. But Spectre, if you can I take a minute? Well, another mass shooting happened today. That is pretty much the most American thing that I think you can say at this point. I won't talk too much about it. I will play this for you. This is one of the survivors of today's mass shooting. He was also involved in the shooting that happened last year in Las Vegas. My goodness. Here's the audio.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's the second time in about a year and a month that this has happened. I was at the Las Vegas Route 91 mass shooting, as well as probably 50 or 60 others who are in the building at the same time as me tonight. It's a big thing for us. You know, we all are a big family, and unfortunately, this family got hit twice.
I just can't imagine that you go through the ordeal that happened in Las Vegas. You probably just start to get over it, just start to go back out again, just start feeling like yourself, and then you were involved in another mass shooting in which double-digit people were killed yesterday. What a horrific event that happened today. Thoughts and prayers to everybody involved. That is my minute for today.
Speck, can I get a minute, please? I'm done with Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Brown was cited Thursday morning after he allegedly drove 100 miles an hour on Pittsburgh streets. This is according to WPXI. In Pittsburgh. He was in a black Porsche. He was charged with reckless driving after he sped past an officer. He's driving 100 miles an hour in a 45. That one thing wouldn't make me be done with Antonio Brown. But here's the other thing. In the offseason, Antonio Brown apparently had $80,000 and a gun in a duffel bag stolen from his condo in Miami. So what did he do? Trashed his condo and threw furniture off his 14th floor balcony. Almost hit a 2-year-old kid and his grandpa. Man, this dude's like endangering other people's lives. One thing, yeah, okay. I mean, we're seeing a pattern of behavior here with Antonio Brown. I'm just done with guys like that. I mean, you're literally not concerned with the well-being of anybody else with the exception of yourself. You drive 100 in a 45-mile-an-hour speed zone. You throw furniture off your 14th floor balcony and almost hit a 2-year-old and his grandpa. I'm done with Antonio Brown. My minute.
Can I take a minute?
No.
I'm rewatching Black Panther kind of the last 3 or 4 days or so, just kind of in increments, and I had a couple of thoughts now having watched it kind of a second time through. We don't give probably enough credit to Killmonger for growing up without a dad, getting out of Oakland, going to MIT, becoming a decorated war veteran. Now his ideas about what to do in the future probably can't go along with all of that, but credit to Killmonger for getting out of the situation that he did and becoming kind of almost an American hero. Now, I wish they had kept him alive because I would have been interested in him continuing on his character, that being Michael B. Jordan. Secondly, and maybe someone else can explain this to me, the guy, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Daniel Kaluuya.
I know who you're talking
who
about.
Who was in Get Out, the main character in that movie. He was best friends with Chadwick Boseman and Black Panther in the movie.
It'd be your own people.
And then all of a sudden, he just turned on him. Now, I know he was upset that he wasn't able to kill that Australian guy, but he turned on him really quickly, and I can't for the life of me figure out why it happened that easily. That's my minute.
Speck, on the Protein House Eat With a Purpose text line, a really good question. Did Speck say he's watching a movie over a 3 to 4 day period? LOL.
What's wrong with that?
You watch a movie over a 3 to 4 day period? Really? Like, what do you watch, like 30 minutes at a time, or what do you do?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Is that weird?
I think it's a little weird, yeah.
I more just want to figure out that you had really a deep dive and a think piece on a movie that came out 9 months ago.
Well, you see it in theaters. And
I
then
thought
you...
he was talking about Black Panther 2 when he brought this up to me. I'm like, wait a minute, is the other one out?
Initially react to it, and then I'm rewatching and getting some of the subtleties, I'm picking up on new stuff.
I'm not one to judge. I'm just saying that your minute was basically a BuzzFeed article from late February at this point. We've had all these conversations before. That's all I did. But hey,
can you explain the Daniel Kaluuya?
It'd be your own
face
people.
Turn?
That's what it'd be. It'd be your own people. They were friends in Wakanda. They were hanging out. They were boys. And then this other dude came in with these ideas. And you could see when that kind of stuff happens, you could tell how people really feel about you. That's what happened. He always felt that way towards Black Panther. He just finally had an outlet for it. Finally had
guy.
An escape.
Yeah.
That's what happened
they
in this one.
They should have continued Michael B. Jordan's character. I think it was a mistake to kill him off.
I'm really excited to see Michael B. Jordan in Creed 2 coming up.
When does that come out?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, coming up. Creed 1 was great. I rewatched that not too long ago.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I think the first Creed is as good as the original Rocky movies, in my opinion. It's up there. Creed is a really, really good movie.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we had Matt Miller on the show, and we asked him, would he pay Steven Nelson? Here was his answer.
Yeah, and I think with Nelson, you would almost be a little more comfortable with the fact that, okay, maybe this is just a product of opportunity. Like, he finally has a chance to, and maybe everything's clicking for him out on the boundary, that you're going to, you know, feel like he can be a building block for the secondary moving forward. But I don't think he's like that A.J. Bowie type guy that kind of comes out of nowhere as in his last year and you pay him and then he goes somewhere and he ends up being pretty good. Like, I would still be a little cautious about giving him anything near, like, top corner money. I think he's probably, like, the top end of tier three is where you look at paying him.
I actually agree with Matt Miller there. I wouldn't give Steven Nelson top corner money either. But if you look at this roster and you look at the secondary guys that are under contract, only Kendall Fuller, Tremont Smith, and Charvarius Ward are under contract for next season. Orlando Scandrick's on a one-year deal. Steven Nelson is this is the final year of his contract. I don't think you're going to use the franchise tag on Steven Nelson. That will probably go to D Ford. So you're going to have to figure something out at the cornerback position. I do think that Steven Nelson has had a very impressive season. We talked about this at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
This was a make or break year for Steven Nelson. This was a go get your money kind of season from Steven Nelson. He's done that this year. He's been good, just given kind of our expectations for him. Steven Nelson has put together a really good season. He's finally gotten the opportunity. He's been thrusted in the role to it, and he's certainly made the most of it.
I think D Ford and Steven Nelson are kind of – they have a common thread, all right? They're both having great years, really good years. I think D Ford's having a great year, but I think Steven Nelson's having a really good year at a position of need and at a place where the Chiefs aren't really deep. So it puts the Chiefs in a tough spot here. You're right. Kendall Fuller's your only guy under contract. Probably not bringing Orlando Scandrick back. Not going to see him.
I actually would like for them to bring Orlando Scandrick back.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe. I mean, probably get him cheap for right?
Orlando Scandrick has been their best cornerback this season. Now, I
don't think he's been better than Kendall Fuller.
I mean, the numbers would suggest he's been much better than Kendall Fuller so far this season. I'm not saying you would break the bank for Orlando Scandrick. I mean, I'd happily sign Orlando Scandrick to a 2-year, $10 million, six of it guaranteed, a lot of incentive kind of contract. Orlando Scandrick has been really good in this system. That's where you got to give Bob Sutton a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Orlando Scandrick got cut from the Cowboys earlier this year, got cut from the Redskins during training camp. You pick him up on a 1-year veteran minimum kind of deal and you turn him into that. Orlando Scandrick has played worthy enough to get another contract, in my opinion.
He's been fine, but you always say youth, right? You want to get younger and cheaper. I mean, you're not going to get cheaper with Steven Nelson, but you're certainly getting younger legs. I mean, Orlando Scandrick's, what, 31?
Mm-hmm.
So I think Steven Nelson's he's in a position of power right now with the Chiefs if he continues to have this kind of season, because I've been impressed with him. But I have my questions about him, the same as I have D Ford. If Steven Nelson could play like this, why didn't he do it the years before? And I know he had some injury problems, but that's the concern. I'm with Miller on this. I think he's top end tier three.
I can see a team, though, overpaying, though. I can certainly see a team overpaying for Steven Nelson, and he gets
– like a Brandon Carr type deal?
I don't know if he gets that, because I thought Brandon Carr just at the time was just a much better corner prospect. But I could see Steven Nelson getting a 4-year, $35 million deal. Somebody gives him 15 guaranteed because they really like what they see. He is a young player. Mm-hmm. When he finally got the opportunity to start and was really put in that situation, he really performed. I could see a team overspending for Steven Nelson. I don't think that Steven Nelson and D Ford are back on the team next year. I don't know if there's enough money for both of those guys and for you to make significant improvements on the defense. I think the Chiefs are going to have to pick, and I think they're going to end up picking D Ford. Pop quiz.
Five, four, three, two, one.
It's
exciting quiz program.
Pop quiz.
I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
Today's pop quiz is presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. The winner gets a 4-pack of tickets to the World War I Museum. Today's pop quiz is a movie. Take it away, Spec.
Dog, take a seat. What's this guy standing in line for? He ain't got money to eat.
If you know what movie that is, call up Spec right now, 913-576-7610, and the passes are yours. Coming up in just a bit, I think we may be off on this game. I'll explain it coming up. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.